Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, host of the Riderflex podcast and founder and CEO of our day job recruiting firm, Riderflex. We hope you enjoy this episode. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast for updates and news. Finally, if you haven't already, check out the series of books we've published on hiring, interviewing, and overall career advice titled The Riderflex Guide, available on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Most homeowners don't have the time or expertise to properly take care of their home, which causes costly issues to arise. That's where Kura Home Maintenance comes in. We're a full-service, routine maintenance company that was developed by a certified home inspector. Each quarter, we service our clients' homes following manufacturers' recommendations to properly maintain all the necessary appliances. We provide the materials and expertise to prolong the life of your property, creating a healthy and efficient environment for your family. From top to bottom, we'll maintain and service your home. To get started, we have a property inspection to determine what needs to be maintained, and a maintenance plan is created based on your preferences. From refrigerator coils to filters, vents, and drains, we do it all, and we do it well. Contact us today for your free routine maintenance inspection. And never worry about your maintenance again.
You know, we've had like over 400 guests on the show now, believe it or not. I think you were like, I don't know, guest number three or something. You were in the first five or six, right? And wasn't it just audio? I think you weren't even on video, I don't think.
I'm not sure we were on video.
Yeah, I think it was just audio, and you were one of the, you know, you were kind enough to come on the Riderflex podcast, even though I had no idea what I was doing. I still don't know what I'm doing, but back then it was even
worse. I just remember you saying, I got this hunch that I got to get content, and I've got all these amazing people. Why don't I just get that content? And then sure enough, we'll get where you are. It's great.
Yeah, it's working out okay. You know, it's working out okay. Thanks for being a supporter early on of the show, and being an early guest. You know, when I listen to the clips, you know, from a long time ago, I always think to myself, God, that was terrible. I had no idea what I was doing. But anyway, thank you for coming back on the Riderflex podcast, JP O'Brien. Awesome to have you on the show again. You've also been such an awesome supporter of Riderflex, our day job as a recruiting firm. Thank you as an advisor for that, and just as an advisor for me personally. Appreciate everything you do for me and for Riderflex. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
You're always helping people, bro. You're always helping people. You're always connecting people and helping people. You do a really great job of that. So many of us could learn from how you give back. And you're a master networker. Do you remember how we met?
Yeah, I believe, check if I'm correct. I think we met from Jennifer Pringle, who introduced us because you were starting the at-home flower delivery.
That's right. I'm surprised. Yeah, you remember. Yeah, Scott and I, speaking of being entrepreneurs, we were trying to get a little home delivery annual flower business going, because Scott had been in that business before. And I remember me and Scott, we pitched our idea to you at a restaurant or something. That was, gosh, man, that was a long time ago. 8, 9, maybe.
Probably Efren's or something.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. Wow. Thank you, Jennifer, if you're listening to this show somewhere down the road, for introducing us.
I remember just to recall, it's like a vivid in my mind. So, Steve, you've watched, you know, you're kind of beta testing this, you know, at home flower delivery, you know, fresh flowers, get them in home.
Right.
And the UPS guy brought my box to my door, and it was upside down. So all the soil and everything was all over. And I was just like, oh man, this is going to be tricky. Like, how are you going to have the logistics people care about what's in that box? So anyways.
Yes. We actually had a box designed by a box company. And
somehow I saw that, yeah.
Somehow I talked this guy into like designing a box for us and making a bunch of boxes, and we didn't have any money. I can't even remember how I talked him into it, but anyway. JP, we don't have to do a full background because you've been on the show before, but just a little bit more about you personally for the listeners who may not know you for this show. Give us just a quick overview of JP, the family, the human side of it, you know, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm definitely in this interesting part two transition in my life, and I've been in there for about 10 years. I just turned 50 last March. But my background is I was born in France. My dad was an IBMer. I grew up mostly on the East Coast, went to school up at Cornell for an aerospace engineering degree. Got into the internet when, you know, it was just happening. I think it was my sophomore spring is when the first web browser showed up like at campus, right?
Yeah.
And just jumped onto that, became a technologist, software developer, architect, started my first company in 1998, which was a edutech learning productions was the name of it, company that we sold in 2000. Good first win for some young entrepreneurs.
Nice.
And that kind of really kicked off my like entrepreneurial thing. And I think that's what the personal side of that is, like, I love diverse groups. Like even at Cornell, I ran this hybrid electric vehicle team. Imagine like early 90s and we're building electric cars to race. But we had 60 completely cross-discipline, you know, engineers and business majors on the team. And I just remember the not just the power, but the innovation and the capability to think about the problems in a different way, because we had this very diverse mindset. So that probably was a big impact on where I am today, because, you know, I went through my career, and then about 10 years ago, and you know, the story is when I really took a step back to figure out like, what's part two? And, you know, life gives you those moments, right? Whatever happens, maybe a relative dies, maybe you lose a job, maybe, you know, something happens that kind of shakes you. Maybe you find you've got cancer, right? Who knows? And I had one of those opportunities to like really sit back and be like, hey, if this is one of my one shot at this existence, what's worth working on? What's worth doing? And that's when this concept of core purpose came to me. And when you look at all the greats, you know, we could dive into this today, but I mean, you look around my room, I got all these books about all these people who've done amazing things, Leonardo da Vinci, Einstein, Feynman, you know, Mandela, MLK, you name it, these people. They led with purpose. It wasn't a business model or a skill set they learned in school that they held on to. They have to go be an engineer, or they have to go, you know, let's find a business model that makes us the most money. No, they had a purpose that was bigger than anything else, and they were willing to live and die for it. And most of them went to jail or got shot, or, you know, so a lot of these people had some true adversity. And that was, personally, that was a massive impact. That's 10 years ago now, when I really took the time to dive into that philosophy.
Did something happen? Was there a pivot moment? Did something happen? Did you get sick? Did something happen in your life? Or did you have an exit right there? What was that doorway?
Yeah, well, my mom had died 2 years before that. So that had a big impact. I just think I was still grieving through that.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I had an exit, which was not a favorable exit in one of my companies.
Okay.
And there was enough there just to kind of question, like, to have those questions. But I, you know, I think being 50, I see a lot of my peers going through this, and it's not necessarily like something significant, right? In 40s and, you know, 40 to 60, I see a lot of my peers going through this, and it's not, you know, we could call it the midlife crisis, but it's really not. It's like this becoming of acknowledging what's going on, a little bit of like, okay, you're not going to be immortal, you're going to die at some point, right? Very stoic. But I'll share this with you too, Steve, which is because it'll help, I think, in the conversation. I also became a meditator about 10 years ago, and I really changed my spiritual like path. I really tried to change my mindset. I really try to make like well-being a complete, not just like a byproduct, like, hey, let's go to the gym every once in a while and stay well, but well-being being an integral part of operating a business, an ecosystem, the responsibility of a CEO to take care of their employees and hopefully even their customers in a way that's much, much more than transactions. So I'll pause there and then go from there.
So that 10 years ago, what's about 10 years ago? Is that when, okay, you start the meditation, you start thinking about your own health, your own mortality. You also just went through an exit that didn't work out and you're having this, what the hell am I going to do now moment a little bit, but kind of, but you had always, the entrepreneurial bug had always been there. You'd already been a so-called, you know, lifelong entrepreneur, like a serial entrepreneur at that point, but you were still kind of having this, okay, what am I going to start next? What am I going to do next? Moments right around there. Isn't that when Black Lab started about 10 years ago?
Yep. So the genesis was, so my purpose in life is to unleash the greatness in people around me. Right. So I was like, oh, well, I figured this out. Right. I went down this 9-month path. And when I figured that out, I was like, cool. Now what am I going to do with that? And, you know, the ideas were go be a teacher, go be a coach at a university. And what came up though was to build a place, a vehicle, which is Black Lab, where people as crazy as you and me can come together. And the whole point of Black Lab is to launch technical companies that are going to solve massive problems for the world and humanity.
And did that spark come a little bit from your experience at Techstars as well? Is that a kind of, did that influence your decision?
Techstars was a great model. It was a growing accelerator at the time. I think they had been in business for about 4 years at that point, 5 years at that point.
Okay.
And I knew the team over there really well. Some of them were ended up being mentors for me during the process. But, you know, I think from a mission orientation perspective, we really wanted to focus around solving problems to propel humanity forward is what we say.
Okay.
And that is different, I think. I think today impact investing and impact private equity is actually starting to become a thing, thankfully. That was our mission orientation from day one, was how do we build companies that really make a positive impact, not just make money, not just do something else.
Okay. But you wanted to tie it to sports and athletics and health and wellness for the most part.
Well, sport is such an amazing thing. Like I played sports in college. My son plays sports in college. Like, so we have like sport is such an amazing tool. And it's also a great beachhead for any human performance tech. Mm. And whether it's physical or emotional or mental or spiritual, you know, everyone in sports trying to get this edge on human performance. But then sport quickly goes into like special forces and firefighters and, you know, people who are tactical athletes. But then it also goes into our jobs, right? Like human performance in an interview is still, there's still a human performance element. You know, you still need to eat and get the right nutrition. You still need to sleep. You still need to recover. You still, you know, all these things are super important. You have to be able to stop the thoughts and the brain, cool the brain down a little bit. So all of these tools, while they're the sports area are hungry for them, they're then can be democratized across the entire globe.
Mm-hmm. For the listeners, how do you, if you meet somebody on the street today and at a restaurant and they say, what is Black Lab Sports? What does your 3-minute elevator pitch sound like to a stranger right now today?
Yeah, I try to keep it very simple because there are some moving parts to this, but I say, listen, we're venturing towards global impact. And at the core, we're an investment firm that launches and invests in and builds companies to propel humanity forward.
Okay. And it doesn't have to be tied necessarily to sports or athletics necessarily or health and wellness. Would your firm invest in something else? I guess Ice Black is a CPG or athletic or a sport product. I don't know if it's health and wellness. So I don't know.
Yeah. Our first company that we launched internally was a company called Ice Black, which is the idea. So let's go over the idea. The purpose of the company was what if we were able to create like, you know, the excitement of sports. You were a coach, your sons play the whole thing, right? Like,
yeah.
What if you could bottle the emotion behind game day and sell that bottle? What would that look like? Would it be a smell? Would it be a cologne? Right. Would it be a smelly sock? What would that passions be that you could sell? And so what we did is we built a new eye black company. So the football players, baseball players, lacrosse players put eye black under their eye to reduce the glare, but maybe sometimes even just to put their game face on, to be ready, to be present. And we realized that my kids at the time were, 10 and 12, and we were putting this eye black on them, and it was from China, and it was filled with parabens and nastiness. And so, yeah, it ended up being a CPG product that when you look at it, you're like, well, how is that propelling humanity forward? Well, if I can help people put their game face on, these young kids at 12, 14, even the pros still use our products, like there's something there.
I see. I see. Okay.
There's
So
something really there,
I
right? Like
got you. I
there's an
got you.
emotional connection when you start to tap into that sort of thing. So that was the purpose behind it. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Ice Black, by the way, for the listeners, ISPLACK, just for the listeners, in case you don't know, iceblack.com. So back to Black Lab. When you, sorry, so you're having this moment. I'm trying to visualize this with you and Jennifer, right? You're at home and Jennifer's like, okay, well, what the hell are you gonna do now? And you're like, well, I got this idea. I'm gonna buy this gym and I'm gonna start an investment firm. And I'm just wondering how some of those early conversations went with your wife a little
She's a rock. She's
bit.
my best friend, my partner in life. She's I couldn't do any of this thing without her. She's and she's also like brilliant, like right now she's a partner at West Monroe, which is she basically does private equity due diligence and integration for private equity groups. So she's a consultant in that area.
That's great.
But she's always been super helpful, right? Like she's always supportive. Even this morning, I got the text. She's, I think, in Minnesota today. She's like, keep crushing it and be unleashed and unleashing, So she's like, she gets it. And I think my whole family did that too. It wasn't just her, my son, my daughter,
Okay. All right.
they kind of learn kind of my path, but I think they also benefited and then have mirrored back a lot of that. So, but yeah, it was crazy. It was a crazy idea even for Boulder. I mean, literally our location in Boulder is called Black Lab Sports, and it's got a whole co-working space. It's got this massive human performance gym and lab, got a whole wellness place so you can get cold plunges and massages and acupuncture. And we got 3PL at the back. So literally every stick of Ice Black that gets shipped through our 3PL, which is a third party logistics party, basically a warehousing and distribution company. We have
Okay.
art studios in here. So literally we're trying to bring in the art with the business, with, that creativity in this all around human performance. So anyway, yeah, it was a crazy idea even for Boulder. And we got early investors. They all kind of were like, what are you doing? We raised our first fund, invested in our first Onyx Sports was actually our first investment ever, which I think
Oh,
we've had. That
I thought Ice Black was your first,
was our first company launch. He was our first like investment, direct investment.
I see. Okay. I see. Gotcha. And yeah, wasn't Onyx, they actually had a little space inside your building, I think, at first, right? Yeah, I remember
Yep.
that.
Launched out of
That's
here. Yep.
right. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah, I can't imagine how those early conversations went. I'll never forget, it was summertime and we was sitting on the back porch. We were having a Sunday afternoon cooking on the grill or something with my family. I think my boys were here and my wife is there, and I was telling them, I was like, listen, I'm gonna turn Riderflex into a recruiting firm. I'm gonna start a recruiting firm. And yeah, that's just the whole, I mean, they were supportive, but they still were like, okay, Dad, yeah, okay, Dad, sure. All right, Dad, sure, go for it, Dad. Like, they were kind of like, whatever, just go get another job, Dad. Like, seriously. But they were supportive too at the same time. I'll never forget that. It's always a kind of an odd conversation when you're having that pivot moment. So so you had to raise, I guess you put in your own money. I don't know how much you want to share. I guess you put in your own friends and family, your own money. You and Jen put money in, and then you had to raise a little bit of early capital as well to get the first funding. I don't know. A lot of the reason I'm asking that question is because I get so many questions about that from aspiring entrepreneurs that come to the show. How to raise cash, when to raise cash, how much to raise, what type to raise, what kind of deals to put in place. I mean, it's always a huge topic because everybody's got an idea, Not everybody can raise the cash to get the idea going. Was it, you want to talk a little bit about those early days when you first went out to raise the cash to get started, and anything in particular you want to share with people for advice around that?
Well, fundraising is especially hard right now, right? And it was probably, and I've done fundraising for multiple companies, Learning
Right.
Productions. We raised early seed round money. Then I started an investment bank, and we raised a fund, a $5 million fund that co-invested with our deal flow. I raised a little over $5 million for another company, Sagefire. So I'd done the fundraising piece, and most of my fundraising was not, hundreds of millions of dollars. It was in that, 0 to 10 range. And I think early on like that, you have to have a real vision for that future. And I think that's probably the biggest advice, is that you can't, you also have to have all the infrastructure and some kind of model that makes sense, and a return analysis for the investors so they can kind of check those boxes. But really, as what I would call a thinker doer, whether a brand new entrepreneur or someone who's done it many times, your number one job is, well, first find your purpose. And then with that purpose, the question is, what does the future look like differently? And be able to fully articulate that, like draw it, paint it, sing it, write it, talk it. It needs to be so real in your mind. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't do that. I think they're like, well, we're going to, hockey stick this growth sales. But like, but what's different in the world? Like, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And I think once you can embody that difference, well, then you're kind of just running towards it. Like, I think, I can't remember who said it, but like right now, look around your room and very quickly count how many things are brown.
Bunch.
Okay.
Bunch. Yeah, the
Now
my
tell
entire
me,
wall, my walls are all brown too.
now close your eyes.
Okay.
How many things are red? Right?
Yeah, I don't
Whereas
know.
now, if you look at it, you're going to see all the red. So the idea is, like, what you're looking for is ultimately what you find. Right? And so you have to create that visual photo. Like, I'm going to go find all the red in the world.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That's the connection, I think, that, and then being able to articulate that to investors. And having them to believe that vision, that's a great way for young entrepreneurs to sell friends and family, and especially seed investors.
When do you make an investment? When does Black Lab make an investment? What's your target size? How much? How many, I don't know, how many pitches do you listen to a year on average? How many do you invest in? Give us an overview if you don't know. There's like eight questions in that statement, but give us an overview.
So, we're not a large firm. We've done 12 investments, and they're always early stage. This year, we've pivoted a little bit on our investment strategy. We're going to be doing six investments a year. They're going to be all in deep tech. We're launching a new fund, and by deep tech, I mean companies that, like, we would not invest in Ice Black anymore, right? Like that, as an example. I love that company, but we're not going to be a target investor. We're looking for companies that are based on some new innovation or invention in technology or science or engineering, manufacturing, that makes possible today that was impossible yesterday. And ultimately, it's around for the benefit of humans, very human-centric approach. So that's our focus. And we're really going super early on kind of the venture studio side. We're looking for technology that's well developed, maybe even in Europe. And we're bringing it to the US and launching companies here in the US around that technology. So it's a pretty unique, I have not seen anyone doing it this way yet. I'm sure it'll be, if it's successful, it'll be copied many times, would be great. But we really look at this global impact and broadening our approach, not just here in Colorado, not just here in the US, but really having an impact globally.
Anything you can mention, anything recent that you can highlight or mention that would, for an example?
Well, we haven't launched the fund yet, so we don't have any initial investments on that. But I'll give you an example of a deep tech company, and this is one that I'd love for you to try, Steve. Actually, is a company called Me Biosciences, which was a studio model here. The quick personal story is, and this is what happens, right? Is that 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I guess now, I found a bump on my hip and ended up being this hidradenocarcinoma tumor, which is a really rare form of cancer. And I went down that path. I was like, how do I have cancer? I'm 45 and like, what is going on? And of course they don't know much about it, especially this one, except for that most people die within 3 years because they don't ever get it removed and it metastasizes. And
wow.
So I got lucky to get it out. But I still had the question, like, why do I have cancer? This is one of those times, right, Steve, we talked about before, like sometimes you're like, you have cancer. That's a big statement.
Yep.
And it shook me. And so I went down and went to all the best doctors, you know, I'm lucky to have access to some of the amazing doctors, and nobody could tell me how to solve it. They're like, well, we'll do radiation. We'll cut down and pull out some more lymph nodes. And I'm like, well, if you know nothing about this cancer, why would you recommend that? And they're like, well, that's just what we know from other cancers.
Right.
And I was like, well, why is it here in the first place? They're like, well, you probably bumped your hip when you were a kid. Did you play any sports? I'm like, am I going to have cancer everywhere? And like, well, it doesn't really work that way. And then I said, well, so why is this one like acting that way? Because apparently we have cancer all over our body, right? It's just whether it's quiet or it's active.
Okay.
And so this one got active and it was growing. And so I'm like, well, why is it growing now? And they're like, well, we don't really know that either, but you're feeding it something. I was like, cool, let's stop feeding it. And they're like, well, we don't know how to do that. So anyway, it got me really curious about this problem, right? Like, well, how, why? And so I did all my DNA, did my genome sequence. I got all my biomarkers done, much more than my primary care doctor would ever do, right? Like everything. Try to like correlate all of that information and just realized that I was starting to spike my blood sugar poorly with simple things like simple carbs, like bread and pastas and whatnot.
Okay.
And so I just changed my diet. And I lost 40 pounds, Steve, and I got rid of cancer and I'm in better shape than I've ever been. Right. So I think I was like, so that aha moment. Okay. So what's possible now? Well, genome sequencing was not possible, was not affordable.
And what is it? And do you mind explaining what that is in layman's terms to the listeners?
Yeah. So it's amazing. Like how this creation and how life has done this. Every single cell in our body has a strand of DNA, the same exact blueprint. Every cell. And every cell in your body has that exact same blueprint. So it knows exactly what to do and how to do. And these cells are crazy. They turn into eye cells and muscle cells and teeth cells. Like it's amazing, right? But all of that probability is stuck in your DNA. And so I think it was, let's see, 30 years ago or so, 35 years ago now, was the first human sequence of this. They basically take, you know, your cells and they put them in a machine and it takes this teeny little thing and strand and starts to decode what's in that.
Okay.
And then, so when you do a full genome sequence, you have these things called genes. And some genes are showing, like the color of your eyes, whether or not you have hitchhiker's thumb, whether you can twirl your tongue, right? These are all obvious things that you could never change. But some genes are like probabilistic. In other words, they're subdued. So I have something called an APO3/4 gene, which okay. basically means that if I eat saturated fats, I'll have a 25% increased probability of getting Alzheimer's.
Interesting. And, wow. That's okay. That is a big stat. Okay. All right. Very good.
Right? So yep. I should probably just not eat saturated fats, right?
Yep,
I
mean, right.
It's an easy choice, but wait a minute. What's a saturated fat? I don't know if you know this, but coconut oil is saturated fat, which is the same thing as MCT oil, which if you've listened to Dave Asprey or some other folks are like, you have to have MCT oil every morning. Well, because they're an APO1/2 probably, or a 2/2, not a 3/4. And so all the people that are drinking that, like I was doing, drinking those, you know, things for human performance, but not realizing you have to personalize it. So think about now, MeBio is using the technology of genome sequencing to be able to provide you a personal, 100% personalized recommendation for your food, your recovery, your workouts, everything about your own body to make it optimal, to make you have optimal well-being. So I'd love for you to go through it.
Okay.
We'll make that happen. But And then once we go through that, you can experience and see what's going on. But that's a deep tech company, right? Something that was never possible before, now all of a sudden can give you insights into extreme, you know, extreme insights into your body. Like, I'll give you another example just real quick on this one. So my son was, let's see, how old was he at that point when we started this thing? But anyway, after I went through this, I had my family go through all the sequencing. And we found out in his early teens that he has something called MTHFR, which is a methylation deficiency. In other words, he doesn't methylate vitamin B, and it doesn't take the sun vitamin D in well and convert it to vitamin D in the body. And this has been shown to be an early onset, like early fatigue syndrome. So you can imagine a lot of people have this.
Okay.
So I'm like, oh no, he's got this horrible like gene, and like, what are we going to do? Well, the solution's super easy. Once you know that, all he has to do is take pre-methylated vitamin B, pre-methylated meaning a supplement or a nutraceutical that's already pre-methylated that the body can then absorb, has more bioavailable. And it just, you know, completely changed his world. He's got tremendous energy. He's playing, you know, D1 sports and in college. And it's just, that's the sort of thing that when we have this knowledge, I mean, it can really unleash what we want to do.
Will Black Lab invest in, when you say deep tech, does that include manufacturing or robotics or hard goods, so to speak, and things like that?
It does. Okay. Company we're looking at right now is a sensor company. It's out of Barcelona. Cool, really interesting founders. They're scientists though, right? They're not really entrepreneurs. They're right. Truly scientists. Yeah. But the technology they developed is unbelievable. It can, at first they put it in waterways. So whether you're whether for medical purposes or for agriculture, you can read what's in the water while it's going through. Mm. So bacteria, viruses, you know, toxins. And this is it's a multi-$100 billion industry to solve that. But what they figured out just recently is that they can also measure all these particles in the air. And so if you get close to one of these detectors and breathe close to it, and if you have lung cancer, they can now detect that lung cancer. So it's that sort of sensor technology. That's a deep tech technology. So who are the stakeholders here in the U.S. that would want that? Right?
Okay.
You can let your imagination go for a minute, but there's... That if that technology exists and the IP exists, then what Black Lab wants to do is take that to the US and help scale that technology through licensing and help grow that company in a way that they wouldn't be able to do themselves.
Yeah, it sounds to me like, you know, if it is deep tech that makes the world a better place from an environment or health or human health perspective, you're interested. If it's a deep tech video game controller, that not really.
Yeah, a deep tech, a new baseball bat using some deep tech manufacturing, probably not going to move the needle, right? Yeah,
gotcha. How many pitches do you look at, or how many deals do you guys look at a year on average? You look at one a month, one every... Oh, you said six this year. How many deals do you have to look at to invest in six? 100?
No, it's probably about, I would call the numbers normally like 1200. So that ratio that you have to look at, because quickly you go from 1200 down to 120, right? Okay. Like that. But you have to look at a 1200 to be able to source the 120 that you want to then dig into more.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you want to start digging into it, of course, there's a lot of reasons why things fall out. The founders don't want to, you know, participate the way you want to participate, or, you know, lots of different other reasons. But then that will narrow us down to, you know, probably we're hoping 20 investable ideas that we then pick our top six.
Okay. And you, as the leader of Black Lab Sports, are you more involved in the cash raise or more involved in the deal selection, or both? You're still leading both for the most part for now.
Yeah, I've got a great team around me. And you're part of our community. So I leverage an amazing bench of industry, you know, veterans, a lot of science, a lot of I could never hire all these technologists and scientists, right? And thank goodness they've got really well-paying jobs at Stanford or in the DoD or wherever. But I can tap into them because they're interested in the same thing. We've linked by purpose that we're working on stuff to solve world the humans' like hardest problems. And so I can then say, hey, here's what we're doing. How do you want to be involved? Do you want to be an advisor? Do you want to be an investor? Do you want to jump on this thing and be part of the company? How do you want to be involved? And that's really kind of a key. It's not probably not a differentiator. I think other people have done that in the investment world, but for us, it's a key pillar.
Isn't it interesting how life turns you left or right, or you go through one little doorway, or something happens, right? And you go down a different path. I'm just guessing that if you hadn't had that bump on your hip, you probably would still be focused on investing in things like Onyx Sports or Ice Black or baseball bats or whatever. And you might not have gone down the more health aspect with your investments. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's a fair. I think you're probably right. I guess I hadn't really thought of that specific. I mean, I thought of that for my own health, my own life, the way it's actually given me a lot of compassion for people who, wake up when they're 40 or 50 and they're overweight and they're sick and they got disease because they didn't do it on purpose. They just didn't have that mindset of like you need to be the agent of your well-being.
That's right.
And maybe if they had an early something that shocked them, but they were able to fix early, that could have changed the trajectory as well.
As you get older, you definitely start thinking about the mortality aspect. I'll be 57 this year. And, it's like you said, I have friends that, they pass away or they get sick or they wake up and they got a lump or this or that. I mean, that gets more common as we get older and our friends get older. And I'm very conscious about my health. I'm not overboard, but I try to make sure that I eat the right things, and I try to be grateful for just waking up and not being in pain, right? That's one of the big things for me. At this age, if I wake up and I'm not in pain and I'm having that first cup of coffee and I feel like getting on the treadmill and I feel pretty good, like, everything after that is gravy for me. Almost nothing else can go wrong, right? For the most part.
We'll get you to take your diagnostic, which will give you a full human genome sequence. It'll give you about 70 plus biomarkers, and then a lifestyle survey, like basically like, and then a pace of aging. We'll be able to give you that. So
That's
then
cool.
kind of dial in. Once you know that information, you can dial in what's important, right?
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Can I stay in shape and still have Mexican food and pizza and burgers as much as I want? Because I miss those things.
Some people can. I can't.
Some people, right? By the way, just cutting out the cutting beer way down helps a bunch. My wife, my doctor has always, he's been telling me for years. He's like, "Will you just try more red wine and less beer?" And I have actually done a lot better job of that the last couple of years. I want to ask about Flywheel Project, but before we go down that path, you have always been great at looking forward on what might happen to the market or industries, et cetera, with technology. You are usually way ahead of most people I know with regards to AI advancements or tech advancements. You look further down the road than most people I know. And here we are, we're recording this on February 6th, 2024. And now the advancement of AI and so forth with ChatGPT and all these other things, now it's really moving at light speed. And by the way, you were saying it was moving at light speed 2 or 3 years ago when everybody was like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. Well, it is. you were raising that alarm bell. Not alarm bell is not the right word. You were raising that flag a long time ago, saying, "Hey, you better pay attention." Well, here we are now. It's really moving at light speed. I know you study this stuff very carefully, more than most people I know. So I'm curious now what you think. Now what happens in the next 24 months, in the next 2, 3, 4 years? I mean, it's moving so quickly.
Yeah.
Are we truly headed towards, and I know we could do a whole podcast on this. I know we're not going to have time. Are we moving towards universal pay and robots do everything, and we're all just going to be creative little artists and do our hobbies because robots are going to do everything? Where's this headed, JP?
Yeah, we're there. We are there. And I will say, maybe I'll say this, because we can talk about universal basic income, all these sort of things, which are tools to help society deal with what's coming. You know, like I was saying earlier, back in 92, when the first web browser came out, I saw that in the people around me. We were like, this changes everything. This will change the world. And I don't know if you remember, like, there was like news episodes of like, www, what is this thing? Like, and like, no, who wants a website? Like, who's ever going to use that? That's stupid. It's just, you know.
Yeah, totally.
And if you didn't get on the internet by 2000, you were out of business. That's 8 years. And I'm telling you, that has shifted to probably 18 months for AI. Like, if you don't embrace AI in your business, you will be out of business.
Agreed.
Don't worry about the AI. Worry about the people that leverage AI. Because they're going to be coming for your business. I'll just give you a simple example, which is a good friend of mine, Kurt, he's an Aussie, just moved to the US, but he's been in mining his entire life.
Okay.
In mining, there's nothing more manual and non-digital than mining, right? Like, you go and bring a truck and dig and get this stuff out of the ground and put it in a truck and bring it to a refinery, right? Do its thing.
Yep.
Like, and he was on this so early. We were talking, I think it was about 4 years ago. Yeah. And I'm like, so how are you going to digitize your company? He's like, it's mining. It's dirt. What do you mean? I'm like, you got to digitize it. So he goes home, comes back the next year. We meet every year, once a year, like in March in LA. Big group of us get together. And he said, okay, I think I figured it out. I've put all these sensors on all these trucks. And by the way, their trucks are these massive trucks, yeah, right? They're the ones that have the wheels that are 20 feet or whatever big.
Yeah.
He's like, I put all these sensors on all the trucks. And then I digitized like all of the readback of the truck. And now anytime I have a driver, that driver logs it, like basically checks in, and we track them like F1 drivers. So now we can see everything about who's the best driver, who's the most efficient, who creates the most wear and tear on these trucks, what's the, you know, net profit of that driver. And he ranks all these drivers. And of course, what he can do with that? He can sell that to all the other mining companies. He doesn't have to be the mining company. Now, what's coming forward in this area is quantum sensing. Again, we could do a whole nother episode on this, but quantum sensing is basically using this concept of the knowledge of quantum science. Let's just say quantum meaning super, you know, microparticle. Don't get into that now, but quantum sensing has the ability for us to basically have a sensor that can look at the ground and tell us what's in the ground, like all the way down. Remember that balloon that was going over, you know, maybe it was Chinese, maybe it wasn't. Guess what they found on that balloon?
Quantum sensing. I don't know.
They were looking for missile silos. They wanted to identify where's our missiles.
I see. Interesting.
We were able to, of course, shield and block some of that knowledge. But I will say that if you are a mining company and you're doing it the old traditional way of like drilling to find out and, you know, trying again and, you know, using some of the other ultrasound or the sound techniques, you're going to be out of business. You have to embrace what's coming. So
you have to embrace it. That's, I always tell people that, like, don't be asleep at the wheel, like pay attention. Do you think, tell me if you think, all right, I'm going to give you my ignorant layman's term prediction. I feel like there's going to be this seismic shift/change that's really going to disrupt things short term. There's going to be, while people are figuring out like, oh, what am I going to do for a living now? And jobs replaced or jobs eliminated. And during the short term of transition of people trying to learn new skills or do something different, it could be messy. There could be some high unemployment. Maybe you got to throw in some universal pay. I don't know. But this short-term disruption messiness, until we kind of get down further down the path to where we settle into the robots and the AI doing a lot of things, and now we've figured out kind of what we're going to do as humans and create new businesses, and maybe longer term it settles in and the dust settles and things are okay. I don't know. What do you see?
All right, this is a whole nother podcast. We'll have to do
I
this
know,
one.
I know, I know.
I see us continuing to like put band-aids on the problem and us having a Great Depression in 2030, where everything comes to a head and it cracks. Combination of aging population, living longer, you know, me biosciences, helping people live longer, increasing healthcare, our national debt, the activation of now. You know, we're back into like the days of the Industrial Revolution, where you have, you know, Hitler. This is actually Harari gave this in an interview recently, which I totally resonated with, which was Hitler couldn't have been possible without the Industrial Revolution. Mussolini and the USSR, CCP could not be possible without the Industrial Revolution. Now, we ended up okay, right? We ended up where democracy kind of won. And before Trump was elected, we had the most peaceful time ever recorded history. But now we see this return to control and dictatorship that's, I don't know if you're recognizing it, but it's coming very quickly across lots of different countries. And so we're at this time now where we're seeing the propensity for violence. You know, you see in Gaza, you see in Ukraine, that that's probably going to increase. And if it does, again, that's going to be a massive impact to the world economy. And so we just see this as a, we're planning for it. We've been planning for it since the last Great Recession. And that 2030 is going to be this really cracking point. And I think AI is going to be like the straw that broke the camel's back for society to be able to deal with it. I don't think we're going to be able to just roll into like, okay, here's UBI for everybody to get through this, right? I think that's going to be a cracking point, and it's going to be tough times. So, you know, prepare your mindset, prepare for, you know, abundance but a different level of abundance. In other words, it will just look different. And prepare your children.
Yeah, we could do. Yeah, I need to have you back on the show to talk about this. I don't, you know, people, when I talk to my friends, it's like, hey, listen, I don't want to sound like I'm not trying to be a doomsdayer. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just pointing out, like, you know, when you hear these stats, when people say 40% of the population affected, jobs affected by AI. And that's just a prediction. Who knows? It could be way more than that. I ask people, I'm like, just let that sink in. Like, just let that stat sink in for a minute. 40%. What is that? 3 billion people on the planet that all of a sudden need to transition to different jobs? Like, just let that sink in. To your point a second ago, it's a completely different world. That is a completely different world than we're living in right now. It's totally different. And moving at light speed, really moving at light speed. And you're right. You also said we're not ready for it. Like, just writing checks to people, just sending checks to people, may not solve all of that. Now, the good news is we're not on the gold standard, right? Now we can just print money whenever we want. So we'll just send checks to people to make them feel good, I guess. I don't know, but I do know this. And I could have you back on the show because I know we're going to run out of time and I want to talk about Flywheel Project. Here's what I know. The advice for the listeners. First of all, I'm going to bring JP back and we're going to talk about tech and AI and robots. So we'll do a whole nother show on that. But what JP said right there is the biggest advice I can give you. Do not be asleep at the wheel. Pay attention to what is going on and use these AI tools to your advantage for your businesses as fast as you can. And because if not, your competitors are going to. We're doing that with our recruiting firm. I mean, I still have the human element a little bit on the backside of recruiting. I'm still talking to finalists and putting my, like, let me, I want to meet this person. I want to talk to this person. But I'm using every AI tool I can to do the tactical pieces in the beginning and towards the middle to make it more efficient and faster, because I know my competitors are going to do the same thing. And the last thing I'll say on that is, if you're listening to this episode and you have not used ChatGPT, for example, or Bard or Copilot, like, you are behind. You better pay attention to what's going on. Okay. We could do a whole episode on that. I really want to talk more about that. But one of the things Black Lab has done to, again, help people, help society, it all goes back to helping people, which you do such a great job at, is the Flywheel Project. I want you to tell us a little bit about the Flywheel Project. Go for it.
Yeah, this is one of my real passions, and it really highlights, you know, it's a key component to my purpose. To set it up, first of all, we use first principles thinking quite a bit here. It's a kind of an engineering term, a science term, but first principles means, like, really figure out what is causing, what's the root problem? Like, what's the first principle here? You know, for example, Elon, when he said he started doing SpaceX, he's like, the only way for us to become multiplanetary is for us to reduce the cost of going up to space, like 10x. And the only way to reduce it 10x is to reuse rockets. And everyone was like, that's crazy. You can never do that. But he realized, like, well, the alternative is not possible. So going back to the first principle, it can make you focus on what to focus on. First principle for us is that we're going to go through hard times. We're going to create technology that's a mistake and we have to go fix it. But let's not create. One way to do it is, like, for you and I to build as much as we can and then leave it all behind, leave all the shit for our kids. And that's not an okay answer. We need to incorporate this next generation in today to everything we're doing and co-lead to create the future. We got to co-create the future with them, right? We can't leave a mess for them. And we also can't, you know, we can't just tell them, like, if we just tell them what to do, again, that's not even co-leading. So we built Flywheel Project, which is the simplest way. It's an internship program. We select a very elite group of 10 to 12, elite meaning, I'll tell you what that means in a minute, a very select group, curated group of 10 to 12 interns that we bring to Boulder, Colorado, and we pay them for an internship over the summer. And AI is a massive part of this. Last year, we had 11 students, all different ages, from all over the world, China, Italy, you name it. A lot of folks from Colorado, actually four of them from Colorado, the rest from, you know, Middlebury and Duke and you name it. Cool. Come in and they basically become, the first thing we do is we talk about purpose and we really have them start to explore that. Most of them, none of them, I didn't when I was 20, yeah, know what that even meant. But now we're giving a framework. We're saying, hey, first we want to teach you about this mindset. Then we spend 2 days, full days on a super deep dive on AI. And these folks all become experts, better than you and I. Why? Because now it's their job all summer to learn about every new thing that's popping up. And by the way, like you said, light speed, I mean, literally every 3 months, the whole thing's shifting. Like, what's totally possible? It's completely different. Then what we do, so we got this now, this group of super hungry, and by curated, they're super curious. That's the number one requirement, is that their curiosity to learn and to explore has to be super high. And we got this amazing workforce powered by AI, human touch, young, energetic, trying to find their purpose, entering the world. And what we do over here is we take companies, partner companies, that will pay into the Flywheel Project to help pay for these interns. And in return, they get consulting engagements. So let's say you have, let's say Riderflex, maybe you have, maybe there's another company in that you know well, but let's just Riderflex. Riderflex comes and says, okay, here's 10K. Give me a consulting project for the summer. Then we take a group of these folks, usually three or four of them. We put them on a massive project for you using all the AI tools that we have and that they have. And they end up creating amazing output in such a short period of time. I'll give you one example. Last year, Crocs, you know, the big shoe company here in Colorado, their chief digital officer said, yeah, you know, we're just launching this brand new capability, which is personalized Crocs. So you imagine you know, your football team now can have your girls' soccer team can have everyone have their own, you know, Fairview High School croc that they can wear pre and post game, right? So it's kind of a part of their kit. And so he's built all this manufacturing capability, and now he's got to figure out how to take it to market. And they put the team on there, and his response was, in 2 weeks, you guys did more creative and more opportunistic things. He actually took on, I think, 5 or 6 of those suggestions than our interns did over the entire summer.
How about
and that? It's not just the person, right? You got to realize that. If we had their interns here, I think we would have done the same thing. It's okay. The infrastructure of them being at Black Lab and having all that focus around it. So that's what Flywheel is.
Do you house them? The company donations pay for their housing, or how does that work?
Housing is on their own. So most of the time they'll pair up, or they'll find, you know, housing, or they'll find a friend here or a family friend. So housing's on their own.
Okay.
We pay them a stipend for the summer to come in and learn. We actually just started paying them a couple of years ago. Before that, it was a free internship.
Okay.
But we wanted to flip that model, and we need the partner companies to come and engage. That's the other piece, right? It's not, the money is important, but it's also exposing kind of those root first principle problems in their business. And honestly, AI is the perfect area. So if you have anybody who's like, oh no, I am behind on AI, well, take a project and have this group come in and help identify and actually build out in the matter of a couple of weeks, solutions, AI solutions for your business.
That's a great one right there, because I can guarantee you probably 75% of small to medium size family owned type businesses in Colorado are behind on what AI can do because they're just busy. I mean, the family that owns the concrete, owns the little concrete business that does $5 million a year, I can guarantee you they're not staying up to speed with AI because they just don't have time or whatever. They just haven't looked into it. So that's a great one.
Yeah, you don't have to be crux. We had our accountant take a project, and they were like, well, what's your problem? They're like, well, we just have so many contacts. Everyone's calling us all the time. Like, well, great. We'll create your AI chatbot. So in a matter of a week, boom, they created this whole thing. It's smarter and better and responds faster and more friendly than any grumpy accountant during tax time. And it completely automated that, right?
Why not go bigger? Why not take on 100 students? Or is that the goal? Or are you keeping it small on purpose?
No, we're going to grow it in 2 ways. One of the activities we're doing, we haven't announced this yet, but I'll tell you, you keep it quiet for a little bit. But we're going to be launching kind of a global developmental program. So it won't be the internship, but it'll be a developmental program around this knowledge and all this access for young professionals.
Like an online course program?
And so that's going to be for the people out there that are like, you know, I just think differently than the people, the bozos around me, or like, I see life differently, or like, I want to work on something that's, you know, really meaningful. Like for those people, we want to be a destination to come in and have a community and have programming. So that's one piece. That'll be a global piece that we're going to launch. And the second piece is that we didn't talk about it, but Black Lab X, our vision is to have 100 nodes globally. So we have this one in Boulder. We're launching one in Denver around arts. We're launching one in Germany. So each one of those can then also be a location for an in-person internship.
Oh, wow. We haven't talked about that. I didn't know that. Even me and you doing side talk, I didn't know you were doing that. Interesting. Okay. Not like a franchise. How does that work? Are they like partner? I don't know. What's that business model for you? What does that look like?
It's, yeah. So we can use some of the corporate structure out of Delaware to allow us to have individual companies that are co-owned by other entities. So we'll have a co-ownership in those nodes.
I see. Interesting. Okay. We'll have to talk about that more too. I know we're out of time, my friend. I could easily have you on the show for 2 or 3 hours and talk a lot about AI and technology, but I know you got to run. We're already bumping up against our hour. JP, thank you very much, really, for being on the show. I really appreciate it, sir. Congratulations on everything you have done and are doing.